Okay. Well, we've got Dave Cameron, former president of Cricket West Indies. Toby Radford is with us. We're going to come to him very soon. Could you give us a background to all of this, though? I mean, it seems to be a pretty messy situation in Guyana.
Well, it has been, and I don't want to be really commenting on anything that Mr. Cameron has said, but I'm a little surprised that he has said that Cricket West Indies has observed elections in Guyana in the past 10 years, and he didn't find any difficulty with that. I just have some surprises at that. Because every election that was held since 2014 were all set aside by the court in Guyana as being unlawful and not in accordance with the Cricket Act. Now, I'm sure you would have followed the turmoil that was happening in Guyana maybe for more than 10 years. And as a result of that, the cricket stakeholders and the government of the enacted a Cricket Administration Act to bring some sort of semblance and fairness and transparency in the election process. But when that act was passed in 2014, it was challenged by, if I just use Mr. Sanasi's name, just for ease of speech, mm-hmm. and not in any way highlighting him as in any other way. His group, which was at that time in control of the Guyana Cricket Board, challenged the Cricket Act on the basis that it was unconstitutional. That matter was pending in the court. Now, part of the Cricket Act, the stakeholders had agreed, and the stakeholders included Mr. Sanasi and his group of people who were, quote-unquote, controlling Guyana Cricket Board at the time. They agreed on a cricket ombudsman for the purpose that this ombudsman is going to oversee the first election of the Guyana Cricket Board to ensure that it was done fairly and that at least Guyana Cricket Board will get past the impasse that was ongoing at the time. But because the Cricket Act was challenged, that ombudsman resigned his office without first performing the functions of holding the first elections for the Guyana Cricket Board. Now, at that time, you had, for example, elections for the Demerara Cricket Board where phantom clubs were voting. You had elections in Barbies Cricket Board, for example, where phantom clubs were voting. So the whole intent with the cricket ombudsman was that he's going to weed out this phantom clubs from voting, and so the process can be fair. But he couldn't carry out his functions because in the 2014, all along, no elections being held under the Cricket Act because the Cricket Act was supposed to take precedence after it was enacted in 2014. So any election held outside of the Cricket Act must have been unlawful, and they were so declared. So in 2017, Barbies Cricket Board, mm-hmm. Guyana comprises three county boards, the Essequibo Cricket Board, the Demerara Cricket Board, and Barbies Cricket Board. In 2017, Barbies Cricket Board approached the High Court for an order that an election be held under the Cricket Act. That election was ordered. Mr. Sanasi was directly involved in the process. You had a situation where at that election, although ordered by the court, you had duplicate clubs showing up to vote. So instead of seven clubs and three associations, you had about nine clubs and four associations because they were duplicate voting. Barbies Cricket Board went back to court to challenge that election, and the court again ordered an election. But this time, the court oversee the election by sending a court martial to ensure that the process was fair. All the voting delegates had to submit their delegates to the court so that the court could decipher which were phantom clubs, which was the lawful association, which was the lawful cricket club. So it was a process that was very fair, transparent, and clean. Mm-hmm. And Barbies had their election in 2018. And following that, Demerara Cricket Board decided to bring an action to the High Court to get the same thing that was done in Barbies done in Demerara, because Demerara was the hot spot. Demerara has not had a lawful election since around the year 2009. It might have been before, but my research shows that around 2009. But certainly after the Cricket Act in 2014, they did not have a lawful election until an approach was made to the court in 2018. But this is where it gets interesting. In 2018, the Guyana Cricket Board, quote-unquote, This is 4 years after the Cricket Act. Guyana Cricket Board did not have an election in accordance with the Act. And the tenure of office of the Guyana Cricket Board is 2 years. So from 2014 to 2018, there could not have been a lawful Guyana Cricket Board in accordance with the Cricket Act. But lo and behold, a Guyana Cricket Board headed by Mr. Faisal Backus as the president, Mr. Sanasi as the secretary, they sought to appoint a second ombudsman. Now, it's interesting that you, Mr. Mason, your panelists and the viewers and listeners understand that the second ombudsman, his function only kicks in when the first ombudsman performs the function of holding the first election for the Guyana Cricket Board. So Mr. Sanasi's lawyer used the argument in the High Court in the Demerara Cricket Board election that, look, the court cannot oversee an election because there is a cricket ombudsman. This is the second cricket ombudsman. Of course, that led to a challenge in the High Court. While that challenge was going on, it was discovered that, quote unquote, Guyana Cricket Board had an election in January of 2018. Barbies Cricket Board, which had a lawful election, was not invited to that meeting because under the constitution of the Guyana Cricket Board, two county boards can comprise a quorum. So in 2018, Guyana Cricket Board had a forced election after the passage of the Cricket Act without an ombudsman holding that election. And under the law, it is the ombudsman who must conduct that forced election. So again, that led to a court challenge to challenge that election. While that challenge was going on, Mr. Sanasi again challenged the constitutionality of the Cricket Act. All of this is happening in 2018. After the challenge to the Cricket Act was dismissed, Mr. Sanasi then appointed Mr. Stephen Lewis as the first ombudsman. This was in March. And this got the blessings of then President Mr. Cameron. So it's interesting to note that in March 2019, when Mr. Stephen Lewis was appointed by the then minister with the consultation of the West Indies Cricket Board, Mr. Lewis was in fact two ombudsmen. He was the second ombudsman, which was appointed by the Guyana Cricket Board. And he was now the first ombudsman as appointed by the minister acting in consultation with the president of the West Indies Cricket Board. So you can imagine the amount of confusion that was causing in the system. Again, a challenge was launched to challenge that appointment. So come 2019, the January 2018 Guyana Cricket Board election was set aside as being unlawful. In fact, and I have the judgment before me, the judge said that Mr. Sanasi and the other people who were elected at the Guyana Cricket Board election in 2018 were not to hold themselves out as any executive members or members of the executive committee. But despite that ruling, Mr. Sanasi continued to hold himself out as secretary of the Guyana Cricket Board, although that election was set aside. And the judge in the Demerara Cricket Board election proceeded in June of 2019 to set a date for the Demerara Cricket Board election in August of 2019. But what the judge did not know, and I did not know, despite the fact that I was involved in about 9 court matters concerning cricket in Guyana, I did not know, and the judge who made the order for the Demerara Cricket Board did not know that the act was suspended by a single judge of the Court of Appeal. So, of course, when that was done, Mr. Sanasi applied to the Court of Appeal to stop the August election, the August 2019 election. And naturally, once I learned that the act was suspended, I applied to 3 judges to the Court of Appeal to set aside that suspension, because it was the first time I've seen an act of parliament suspended. For whatever reason, it was suspended. Mr. Sanasi had applied to the court to say that the Demerara Cricket Board can't hold an election because the act is suspended. I agreed. I say, yes, that is so. You can't hold an election under the Cricket Act if the act is suspended. So I consented in the Court of Appeal to await the outcome of the challenge to the Cricket Act, that is the suspension, that the Demerara Cricket Board will await the outcome. In December 2019, the full complement of the Court of Appeal heard the arguments as to why the act should remain suspended, that is from Mr. Sanasi's lawyer, or whether it should be removed based on my arguments. In January 2020, startling, Guyana Cricket Board holds an election. Demerara Cricket Board holds an election. When I challenge those elections, Mr. Sanasi in his response say, well, these are elections for the board that existed the Cricket Act, pre-existed the Cricket Act. Because the act being suspended, there is nothing preventing the old Demerara Cricket Board from having an election. And there is nothing preventing the old Guyana Cricket Board from having an election. Of course, naturally, again, we have to run to court to challenge those elections. In September of 2020, the full complement of the Court of Appeal removed the suspension of the Cricket Act. Having removed the suspension of the Cricket Act, I then applied to the Court of Appeal to say, you now have to deal with the stopping of the Demerara Cricket Board election. The act is no longer suspended. That was around November 2020. Mr. Sanasi's lawyer asked time to put in arguments. They are the ones who filed this application for the stay in July of 2019, but a year and 4 months later, they have still not filed any arguments as to why the election should be stopped. In any event, directions were given. The matter was set for January 2020. Come January 2021, Mr. Sanasi changed lawyers. His new lawyers asked for time to put in arguments. Again, I agreed. That matter was set for the 4th of February of 2021. On the 4th of February 2021, Mr. Sanasi's lawyer removed his application. He sought leave to withdraw it. That is the application to stop the Demerara Cricket Board election. So that having been out of the way, there was nothing preventing the High Court from then proceeding to fix a date for the Demerara Cricket Board election. It is what we call in law, there was no stay of the order of the High Court for that election that was supposed to be held since August 2019. So following that, following my application, the judge set the election for the Demerara Cricket Board for the 15th of February. Mr. Sanasi appealed that ruling of the judge to change date and say, look, you can't change the date for the election on two grounds. This matter is under appeal. And Demerara Cricket Board had an election in January 2020. So I brought to the Court of Appeal's attention that two things. That Demerara Cricket Board in January 2020, Mr. Sanasi was clearly saying this is the old Demerara Cricket Board because his argument was that the act was suspended at the time. And secondly, there was nothing stopping a Demerara Cricket Board election. So the Court of Appeal agreed, dismissed his appeal, and the elections were held on the 15th of February. So, overseen by the court, there were no less than three court marshals there present to ensure that the process was fair and transparent. The association to which Mr. Sanasi belongs, which is the West Demerara Cricket Association, did not take part in that election. And the other director of the West Indies Cricket Board, Mr. Anand Kaladin, who belongs to the East Bank Cricket Association, also did not take part in that election. So following that election, you now have in Guyana three county boards, which comprise the Guyana Cricket Board, all of them with lawfully elected members. It therefore means naturally and based on the provisions of the Cricket Act that the minister must now take steps to appoint an ombudsman and to have the forced election. And so the minister has done so. He has appointed in consultation with the West Indies Cricket Board, appointed an attorney here in Guyana as the cricket ombudsman, and fixed the 26th of February mm-hmm. as the date for the Guyana Cricket Board election.
Ooh.
So I believe throughout now, despite all these court proceedings, that Guyana cricket now has reached a stage where if the court is overlooking the process, the court has overlooked the Barbies Cricket Board election, has supervised that election. There was a fair election, no complaints. The court has supervised the Demerara Cricket Board election. And so naturally, the minister must take the next step under the legislation, which is his only function, appoint an ombudsman, fix a date for the Guyana Cricket Board election. Mm-hmm. As we speak, I understand that there's something to be filed or it has been filed. Nothing has been served on me to stop this election of the Guyana Cricket Board.
This is what I'm hearing. This is what I'm hearing, that an injunction has been filed. So what does that mean? You may not have an election then on Friday?
Well, I, as I said, I've not been served with anything, and as I said in the past, things that happened behind my back.
Mm. But let's assume that you're served. Let's assume that you know there's an injunction. I
don't know. In order to get an injunction, you have to show that your claim is going to succeed.
Oh.
And the claim based on, I see some letters circulating in the press.
Right.
Purportedly from Mr. Sanasi's lawyer to the minister, to the president of Cricket West Indies, and to the ombudsman.
Right.
And based on those things that are said in the letter, if those are the grounds, they are bound to fail.
Ooh.
Firstly, I think one of the things is that they're saying that the minister cannot appoint another ombudsman because he has already appointed an ombudsman and that person has resigned. But strange enough, I notice in that letter, there is no mention that Sanasi, when he was quote-unquote secretary of the cricket board, Mr. Cameron had consulted with the minister and appointed another ombudsman. That, for some strange reason, might have been an oversight.
Mm-hmm.
That has been left out of the correspondence.
Well, Arud,
we have a court ruling.
Mm-hmm. Well, Arud, Mr. Cameron is listening to. I don't know. Dave, you want to respond to anything that was said by Arud?
Yeah, just to say that he's trying to make a distinction between a legal meeting and meetings.
Ooh.
And as far as I'm concerned, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm saying to you, AGM meetings were kept. He's saying they were not legal. That's, you know, and he's went to a litany of things about why they're not legal. So that's outside of my
right
my pay grade.
Mm-hmm.
So all I'm saying that I know that meetings were held.
But you do
as to
continue, Dave. Continue.
No, I have nothing else to say. The meetings were held.
Okay. Okay.
He's making distinction between whether they're legal or illegal. That's a legal matter. Again, like I said, it's outside of my pay grade.
All right. Okay, Arubi, just stay with us. Let's go to Toby Radford though. Toby, you were fired by Skerrit. Would that be right to say that you were fired by Skerrit?
Well, I was working there under Dave and under Richard Pybus for the tour back in 2019, March. I came home after that tour against England and was preparing for the World Cup.
Mm.
And 3 weeks before the World Cup, I was asked to go and to work with the A team in Antigua. I think there was a T20 camp. So I was pretty much demoted, really. So when I should have been going to the World Cup with the first team, I was asked to go to Antigua and work with the T20 A team. So if you want to call that fired, perhaps that's fired.
Also joining us here today is LA County Fire Chief Darrell Osborne. Now I'd like to introduce the Sheriff of Los Angeles County.
Hello?
I think Andrew is muted now. Okay, so you were demoted, and how did that... is that a good feeling for a coach? Well, did that make it untenable?
Well, everybody was moved out of the positions that they were in. So obviously Richard Pybus was moved aside. The whole of the backroom staff, so all the coaches, the physio, the fitness trainer, everybody was moved. Straight after that England success in the Caribbean, 3 weeks before the World Cup. So we were preparing. We were actually on a Zoom call like this, all the staff. And within 3 days, we were all gone. You know, everyone was moving. You know, a new president had come in and it was complete change. So, look, it came as a surprise. It came as a huge disappointment. And having been successful as a team and as a backroom staff and the players were happy going into the World Cup, it was all, you know, and even looking back now, it's nearly 2 years ago, but it still was a disappointment, clearly, because we were going well.
Mm.
And it didn't seem that it was needed at that time. But it was, you know, it was clearly something the new president wanted to do. He wanted to sweep everyone out and put his own people in.
Mm.
And we had no option with that. That was what we had to go along with.
Dave, was that a very bad decision?
Perceive the players?
Just asking Dave if that was a bad decision, Dave.
With how you guys...
I don't need to answer that, Andrew. What were the results at the World Cup?
The results were very poor.
The results so far.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So It's a rhetorical question.
Fair enough. Yes, yes, Dr. Ford. Yes, Doc.
Yeah, I was asking to, what was the relationship like with the players? How do you think the players felt about the job that your team was doing? Did you get any indications or suggestions that the players were dissatisfied and wanted a change at that time?
My belief with the players I was dealing with, that they were very happy with the setup as it was, the way the team was performing, that they'd just beaten England. They were very buoyant, and they were looking forward to the World Cup. So I think they were, as far as I'm aware, they were as surprised as we were when the changes came. And without naming any players' names, having spoken to many of those players, and I still speak to them, they were disappointed with the decision that was made. They were very happy with what they had, with the backroom staff and the setup that they had, no doubt.
Mr. Cameron, you've had some coaching changes during your tenure. As an administration, is it commonplace to involve players in such decisions and to maybe pull them and to speak to them, or is it just me? Is it just an administrative decision when a coaching staff is changed?
Yeah, you know, coaching is one of the it's the most important job within a team, whether it's a manager or the coach, as it is in football.
So is it administrative or is it
for the performance of the team?
Players have a say.
No, players normally don't have a say in decision making. It's pretty much, you know, if you're not satisfied with the results, you have a conversation, and it's a very tough job. It's a very thankless job, to say the least. And that is why coaches get paid so much. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't produce results, then they get moved on.
Okay. I'm speaking to our eminent lawyer who spoke so much about the Guyana situation just now. It sounded really complicated. Most of those things you outlined are you know, only some legal luminaries might understand, but what is the role of an administration of a game in such complicated legal maneuvers that you've mentioned? Do they have a role, or is the solution for Guyana really a legal one?
Well, thank you, Dr. Ford. The problem with the administration, with the legal maneuverings that were going on, was that a majority of the cricket stakeholders were kept out of administration of cricket. Now, you would appreciate geographically, Guyana is a very big place. And so hence the reason why you have the three county boards. They are geographically responsible for their areas of cricket development. But for example, you had Barbies, where you had to go to court to get a lawful election. But despite that, the relationship with Guyana Cricket Board, quote unquote, notwithstanding that there was no legal Guyana Cricket Board, there were people there operating as the Guyana Cricket Board. The relationship was very strained, because when you go to court, it's quote unquote a war. And so you create friends and you create enemies. And therefore, for the past 3 years that Barbies has been operating, is basically Barbies operating without any quote-unquote significant assistance from the Guyana Cricket Board, because Barbies Cricket Board had to have an election where Mr. Sanasi, for example, who holds himself out as the Guyana Cricket Board, was adversarial to those elections. And so, in as much as there's a lot of legal matters going on, it affects the administration, because the people who are fighting in the courts are the very people who are responsible for the administration of cricket. So I believe the court process, once you bring legality to the system and you have the majority of the stakeholders play a part in a fair system, it is going to help the administration of cricket.
Okay. I'm a bit puzzled, because usually in any elections for a sporting organization, the adjudicators don't allow phantom clubs or duplication of clubs, because you decide who the delegates are in the in the voting. So that's very surprising to me that that can happen. But I just like you to explain to us as in as short a version as possible, what is this Cricket Act that you spoke of earlier? Is this a legal governmental thing, or is this a sports administration thing?
Well, the Cricket Act is like any other act of parliament. So it has legal force and effect. But it came about not because of any government regular passage of a bill in parliament to make policies for the government. This Cricket Act, I believe, took about 2 years or more in consultations with all the respective cricket stakeholders. So in other words, the end product of the Cricket Act was what was gathered and extracted from the meetings throughout the country with the various cricket stakeholders and what they wanted in terms of the administration of cricket. So for example, the Cricket Act has four constitutions, the constitution of the Guyana Cricket Board and the three constitutions of the respective county boards, which were products of those respective county boards. So it was not a governmental input. The only input that the government would have had was to table this in the National Assembly and have it pass. In other words, to give effect to what was the demand or request or requirement or the needs of the various administrators of cricket in the country.
Mm-hmm. All right. Just hold your horses. Dave, please stay with us. We're going to open the lines 4341790. I'm sure that people will want to respond to you. But just I just want to just move away just a little bit for a couple of minutes, Dave. Because as you know, Barbados, I mean, an old lady this morning when I saw her, she said, I can't understand what's going on with Barbados' cricket. I mean, they spend so much money, your good friend Condé Riley, and to have a performance, I mean, it's such a gutless performance, you know, the Super 50, five matches, losing four, and they would always wanted to forget that game against the Jamaicans. Wendell Kopp and the managers on the line, stay with us, Dave. We got Hendy Brooms, the chairman of selectors, and they've come to talk to us here this evening on Mason and Guest. Let's first start with Hendy. How are you this evening, Hendy? How are you? Hendy Brooms?
Good evening to everyone.
Good.
You hear me, Andrew?
We're hearing you loud and clear, and Dave Cameron is hearing you loud and clear. Toby Radford, of course, our very good friend, Dr. Ford. And also, you got a lawyer as well. Arud Gassade is there. And, of course, we got Wendell Coppin. Can you explain this poor performance by Barbados? Henderson, can you explain this poor performance?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening to the listeners and manage. Good evening to you as well.
Yes. Okay. Hendy, can you tell us what went wrong in Antigua? Hendy?